Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me reassure you that tonight's episode of the Video Nasty Project is not a rerun. Despite it being a cannibal movie directed by Umberto Lenzi, starring Mimi Lai and Ivan Razumov and Robert Kerman. No, we're not watching Cannibal Ferox. Tonight we're watching Eaten Alive, banned in 36 countries. Why don't you check out the trailer and we'll be right back.
What the hell?
Sheriff!
Hey, you! Stop!
Three homicides. Three men killed with tiny darts dipped in cobra venom.
Cobra venom?
That's bad news. I have to remind you that there are still cannibals in the southeastern jungles of New Guinea.
What?
Brethren, two great perils endanger the well-being of our community. The cave dwellers hungering for our flesh, and city dwellers out to enslave us.
Join us now, you know.
Keep your mouth shut. Get out of here. Mind your own damn business.
Those devils want to see me locked up in a prison cell, but they'll never get to do it. I will not leave my people without their leader.
I got him. There's somebody down there. Call me Rocky.
And that was Mangiavivi. And that was my terrible Italian accent. Otherwise known for the people in the West as Eaten Alive, and not the Toby Hooper Eaten Alive. This is an entirely different Eaten Alive. The movie is actually less a cannibal movie and more a Jim Jones Cult of Guyana story.
So basically, a bunch of people in New York, about four individuals in different parts of New York City, end up being killed by blow dart by a native of New Guinea who is roaming around taking out all these people, and eventually gets hit and killed by a truck in the street.
Yeah, one of them's up in, like, Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls!
the cops, when they search the body of the killer, find a roll of film with the name of this lady's sister on it.
The setup is like, okay, why does this native have a roll of film about this girl's sister? Why is he running around assassinating these people? Okay, maybe because they're political enemies of the Jim Jones character that Ivan Razmov plays later on.
Yeah, his reach is pretty big. And this kind of reeks of Cannibal Holocaust, of found film of a missing person type of deal, taken by this woman, I guess, associate or friend in Jim Jones's camp in New Guinea, showing ritualistic dances and that sort of thing.
Walking on coals, hanging from hooks and in the flesh.
Yeah,
and
they have people.
It's probably just stock footage that they were using.
Yeah, ritualistic things from other countries.
But the only reason that he has that film in his pocket is to set up the rest of the movie. It's really kind of deus ex machina.
Yeah, and then basically we end up following the sister of the woman who disappeared through New York till she comes to a skating rink. And then the plot just basically starts from there.
They do a little bit of an investigation, trying to find out who this Jim Jones character is. They wind up investigating, like, this person who escaped from the cult, but I guess she's really a hooker because the pimp just comes over and just slaps her.
But she's one of the few that actually lived to talk about it, you know, even though it ruined her life, which is kind of telling. It basically shows the kind of reach this guy has, not only in, you know, internationally, but that he can ruin a person by taking their life from them.
And the parallel between Jim Jones, the real Jim Jones, and he had a long reach. He got in trouble and started the massacre off in real life because he wound up assassinating a senator. And that kind of set off the whole shitstorm down in Jonestown. So I suspect maybe that was a little bit, since it's essentially a retelling of that story, a little bit reflecting in that.
Taking history and twisting it a little bit, adding the whole cannibal thing in there for a little bit of spice. And they do some really weird shit in this movie. I mean, some weird shit.
However, I have to admit they did an amazingly good casting with the guy who played Jonas, because he really does look like Jim Jones.
That's Ivan Razmov for you. Yeah. Who, it took me a couple of seconds to realize that was Ivan, because unlike Man from Deep River, where he was sporting a darker look, here he's got... No, he was blonde in Man from Deep River. He had a darker brunette look going on here, and it took me a moment to realize that was him.
I was waiting for him. It took a while, and I had to weed out the four main characters. Ivan Razmov, Mimi Lai, Mel Ferrer, and Robert Kerman, they're all the names I recognize. So once I saw the first three, the one who came, you know, out eventually, it was like, okay, that's Ivan. And he's looking really good, brunette.
Yeah. With me, this is the third time I've watched this movie. The first time I watched it, I also recognized the name of Paola Senatore, who is the actress who plays the sister. And I don't remember exactly what I've seen her in, but I know I've seen her before having watched this. But those guys really bring some serious star power to this movie.
And so Sheila, the sister, winds up realizing that the information on the film is, hey, obviously he's down in South Africa, South America, South, somewhere down in the South Seas. So she goes down to hook up with a guide that would be
Robert Kerman,
who before this you'd recognize him from either Pornography,
Arbola,
or he was in Cannibal Holocaust.
He was really good. I mean, before he became a porn star, he was a stage actor, and so when they got him, he had his acting chops already. So he was one of these guys who can get in there and chew the scenery and make it look believable, because he was an actor as opposed to, like, you know, porn actor, which a lot like Ron Jeremy does straight movies. But he was really good in this, and he's really easy to follow, and you want him to get from one end of this movie to the other. He's not disposable.
He has that kind of roguish, I'm an asshole, but I'm still kind of lovable and charming.
This guy, he sometimes says and does a few things where you're like, ugh. But on the other hand, you know, you can see that generally he's a good guy.
except that he's really free with that backhand.
Yeah, there's a lot of bitch slapping in this. I mean, you're mixing up Han Solo with some Snake Plissken and some Shaft in here or something, or Super Fly or some shit.
He smacks Sheila around a few times.
But and most of the time, it's to get her to shut up in a situation where she's about to freak out. He keeps cold-cocking her because she's about to scream when the cannibals are near, or she's becoming hysterical. And back in the day when women were hysterical, the guys had to slap them to keep them in line, that kind of thing. So it's carrying over the 70s machismo, but in a couple of instances, it does actually help to keep them from being discovered.
And so Mimi, she's really strong, and Kerman's really strong, and Ivan Rasimov is always good. She was the weak one, Sheila, of the bunch. Of the leads, I didn't like her. And I think a lot of that has to do with her dubbing, which is that inconsistent Texas drawl.
She's playing an Alabama, basically heiress to an Alabama cotton fortune, she and her sister. And her sister ended up spending all the money, you know, giving it all to Jonas as a kind of a tithe or something like that.
So they have some jungle adventure at this point. One of the guides gets attacked by an alligator that was lifted from another cannibal movie, but not Brutes and Savages, a different one. They wind up getting separated from their raft and their supplies, and so they have to go through the jungle over foot. They run into some natives, and the natives chase them through the jungle. And I thought that scene was actually really kind of tense and well done. This kind of action scene where they're running away from natives, and it's actually good.
Actually, all of the chase sequences were well done.
Yeah, I did like the jungle scenes. I mean, I thought they were really well mounted, and I thought they had some good tense action to them, especially when you think one of them's going to do a blow dart or something like that and slow them down, which didn't happen, but you think maybe they're going to get the waylay them or something. But they wanted them to get to the Jonestown, you know, settlement, so they just went straight ahead with the full bore action.
There's one scene in particular, which the plot of which is lifted from, I believe it was Man from Deep River, but I mean, it basically is they stumble in on some cannibals. They're eating a local woman, and Sheila is kind of freaking out a little bit, and that's one of the moments where Mark basically grabs her and muffles her. And the natives are starting to look around because they've heard the noise, and they're like, what's out there? And they see an owl, and the owl's making all sorts of noise, and they relax and go back to their eating. But that's, I mean, the footage was different, but the entire scene, which was a really tense and interesting scene, plot-wise was lifted directly from Man from Deep River.
Of the hour and a half runtime, I'm going to guess probably 15 or 20 minutes of this movie was stock footage from other cannibal flicks.
Mostly animal killings and then some of the plot bits, yeah. And the one thing that really one of the things that gets me is they land in Papua New Guinea, but they're landing on a Pakistani air plane. And so everybody there are Sri Lankan and Pakistani, and they aren't actual Africans like actual New Guinea people are, because New Guinea translated English means new black.
My God, they can't even get the animals on the right continent from the stock footage.
Yeah.
So why would you think they would get something like the planes right?
They have one scene where Mark and Sheila are camping, and they're looking around in the darkness, and Mark shines his flashlight on a scarlet macaw and an iguana and some sort of monkey. The two of these things are not found in Papua New Guinea at all.
Oh, you're coming down on the poor production system where Umberto Lenzi, here, do your Umberto Lenzi telling me to find animal footage.
Hey, get me something, I need some, a norm, get me a seek and a twist. You know, I want the bad, the blood and the animal chew.
See,
manja.
So I'm getting this. I have to go find, and I just find alligators and crocodiles and whatever the fuck I can get.
Yeah, somebody give me a stickino. I got something stuck in my teeth.
At least they were jungle animals, but still.
And so we eventually get to the encampment where we meet Jonas and his followers.
We might as well just call the encampment Jonestown. It's never
Jonestown.
Named.
Ivan, he is lording over his subjects. He's, you know, commanding them. It's like, okay, play the Glorious Ninth while I address my subjects.
And the whole place has this feel of a kind of like a hippie commune, but they have a picture of a stylized sword of Damocles, which he uses, and he quotes scripture about Damocles and about, Jehu and a bunch of people from biblical times who committed sins and were punished. It was always about the cleansing ritual. You must get rid of your sins. You must drink the mind-altering substance to cleanse your soul.
Now, admittedly, this guy has charisma coming out the wazoo, but he also, at the same time, comes off as kind of a little bit oily, a little bit greasy.
It's probably hair.
And it really adds to his character.
I love Razumov in the role. I mean, he is, in all the movies we've seen him in, he is fucking the MVP.
Yeah, he is on point. I mean, he's got the greasy hair, he's got the robe and everything. I mean, he chews every scene he is in with just relish. I mean, you can feel just the heat of snake oil coming from this guy. I mean, this man rolls up the fucking cart in the town, you know, and everybody's buying what he's got. They're all a bunch of suckers.
The scene you're mentioning where he's playing the knife, it's a funeral. It's a funeral right. For a guy who's committed suicide. We're not told much about him. But here's an interesting thing. Afterwards, the next morning when the ashes are cool, the widow, who's played by Mimi Li, has to go and basically have sex with her three brothers-in-law in order to cancel out the marriage aspect. And it's done on the ashes of her dead husband and done publicly with everybody in the village watching.
What other movie did we see that in?
The widow aspect of it, that is also is a scene from Man from Deep River where there's another woman who isn't Mimi Li who is basically getting it from three guys that doesn't seem like they're related to her anyway.
And so between all the stock footage, the recycled soundtrack from Cannibal Ferox, and the scenes inspired like the falling, you know, having sex on the ashes of your dead husband, this movie really does play like a greatest hits.
It's lazy. It's lifting a bunch of plot from other places.
And so in that the movie is based more or less on the real life events of what happened in Guyana, they wind up getting away. The people, the authorities start coming in and start taking over the camp. And Jonas, he's like, guys, this is it. We now need to drink the Kool-Aid. Passes out the Kool-Aid amongst his followers. And they all start drinking. And like one of the natives like, I don't want to drink it. He grabs like a poison-tipped dart and like jabs it into the kid and jabs it into her and she dies. So, and then the weird part. They get away, they're back in New York, she's recovering in the hospital. And you hear over the radio them talking about the massacre that happened down in the South. But all the bodies were accounted for, except for Jonas's.
Yep.
And I'm like sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute, does that mean we're going to have a final act of Jonas got up back to New York and is now going to jump them?
That's what I thought.
That's what I thought too.
But nothing comes of it. The movie just ends with him getting away. What the fuck was up with that?
I think they were setting up for a sequel, personally.
Well, you know, there was Ruggero Deodato's Cut and Run, which is essentially the same thing, starring Richard Lynch and Willie Ames. And when I think about it, that almost functions as a sequel, except in the ending is different for the man.
You know, with Italian movies, if they had tighter continuity between the sequels and the subsequent movies, I might attribute that to that, but this is an industry where they take movies that are completely unrelated and call them zombies.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. So I don't think that flies as an explanation.
Maybe they just didn't want to do the typical thing. Maybe they're running out of film, or we just lost interest and just wanted to wrap it up. You know, he said, hey, we shoot enough. We go. Yeah, have the tea. I got to drink something. You know, But the interesting thing that I thought happened to the other two main characters is Mark calls up his bank to find out whether the money's been deposited. Nothing. He got a cent. Turns out that Sheila's sister had given all the money to Jonas, and so Sheila's broke. And she says, how are you going to pay your hospital bill? And it kind of just ends on this sour note, but her father... who's rich. Or I think that's her father. Is it Mel Ferrer? Is Ralph Ferrer's father, is he a cop?
I don't know.
I could never tell.
I couldn't figure out the relationship.
I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see how he gets out of the hospital. That's a sequel in itself.
Yeah.
It ends in a freeze frame 1980 style of... Or something.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I've been conned. And I wonder if she knew that all along, because the look on Sheila's face was a smile, a knowing grin, like she knew she didn't have any money and she conned this, suckered this guy into doing the dirty work for her.
So, do you got any final thoughts then? Any last remisses on...
Nope.
No?
Nope.
No?
Nope. I'm done.
Well, they're all done?
No, I think I'm done.
All right, I think that's an episode then. All right, then. So, Eaten Alive. Would you seize it?
Hell, definitely. Yes. Yeah, this movie is a fucking gross out from start to finish. This is the kind of shit Siskel and Ebert would have had a field day roasting. I mean, the animal mauling, the animal killings on screen, even the borrowed ones, are the entryway drug to this sick fest.
And I full-heartedly concur. I mean, some of the things just should not be done to animals, period, end report. And then they're not to mention all the crap that they do to humans in this one.
Yeah, I mean the female lead sister has her left boob cut off and eaten by the savages,
and she's continued to be nibbled on while she's still alive. And the same thing happens to Mimi Lai, although not so dramatically.
To be fair to the movie, a lot of the violence that's would be bannable here was lifted from other movies. So it's not necessarily an offense on Lindsay's part, although
a few moments.
There were some. But for the most part, like the animal attacks were lifted. The bit where they're eating the snakes in the cave was out of Mountain of the Cannibal God. There were some other bits that were lifted from Last Cannibal World.
So I think part of this has to be boiled down to intent. I think he's culpable in the manner of he's an accessory to the crime, if nothing more.
Yeah, well, there is the one bit where the woman gets violated with basically a wooden dildo.
It is a wooden dildo.
But you don't necessarily see anything. You see Ivan Razumov coming at her, but you don't see any penetration.
No, you don't. But it's all implied and
it's brutal. I mean, he doesn't just go in. I mean, he shoves the thing off screen and with the intent to hurt her.
The animal cruelty alone puts it on the list for me. That just doesn't fly with me. So I think we're all in agreement that, yeah, okay, this movie is hard enough that we would certainly seize it, if not necessarily put it on the 72.
I think this movie is one of the, basically, is one of the poster children for this entire thing to begin with. I mean, it is sick to the core.
All right, so seized. We'd, sorry, shopkeeper, you lose your shit.
Ooh, yeah.
So, any thoughts on if you liked Eaten Alive?
It was a reasonably entertaining movie when it didn't have the sickness in it. I mean, when it was just the pure narrative, I thought the characters were really strong. I mean, Lindsay has a good track record with strong characters, strong actors.
He has some seriously good talent. Even the secondary characters are engaging and interesting.
That's the frustrating thing with Lindsay, is that every time we watch one of his cannibal movies, it's not very good. When I go and watch, like, you know, The Tough Ones or The Rat, The Fist, and The Cynic, those are really fucking awesome movies. Nightmare City, which we'll get to soon enough, is really fucking awesome. So why he can't do a cannibal movie baffles me.
It's probably because it almost like feels like he's a gun for hire. And some of the guys that have directed some of these movies said, oh, I hate this shit. I mean, Diodato, I think. Didn't Diodato say he hated doing cannibal movies?
I know that Mimi Lai hated doing this movie. She just, I don't like this movie. She left acting shortly after this movie. She did like one or two more, and then she realized she wasn't making enough money to support her daughter. So she left acting. She did a couple of jobs after she left and retired. And one of them was she worked with the Essex Police Department. And there she is serving as a policewoman, and she gets a job. She has to go raid a video store with a team. And so there she is in this.
I see where this is going.
and so there she is. Okay, you fucked up my story, Brad.
I'm sorry. Shrek.
And there she is with her team, and she realizes on the shelf is a copy of The Man from Deep River. She's like, oh, God, they're going to recognize me any second now. I'm on the cover.
Ooh, I hope she had a black box to put in front of her face while she was in there.
And so...
Did they have to do a screening?
No, they... Well, the thing is, the cops didn't have to do the screening. The cops... The tapes went on to somebody else to screen, so they didn't realize that she was rating her own material. But there was that brief window where she was like, I don't know who that is. Hey, it looks like me. You're right. I don't know who that person is. Ooh, so she was going to deny... everything.
Mimi? Not Mimi. Nope, that ain't Mimi.
Nah, not me. So, yes, there's ultimate irony for you, Mary Whitehouse.
Oh, yeah. They didn't give her a whole lot to do except be naked and then die, which is pretty much what she does in those movies.
Actually, I suppose I misspoke in that it sounds like I hated this movie, and I didn't necessarily hate this movie. I think it was certainly a lesser effort from Lindsay, but... I thought the Jim Jones angle was kind of refreshing. I think that if they had removed the cannibals and just went with the cult aspect, I think the movie would have been much stronger.
In the movie of this genre, I think that they should either be a comparatively minimal thing, like from Man with Deep River, or a major point of the plot, like in Cannibal Holocaust.
So... it wasn't a complete waste of time for me. You gonna give it a...
I'd give it a weak thumbs up.
Okay, so everybody's kind of... really, go watch The Tough Ones if you got to get an Umberto Lenzi fix on, because that's the movie that you're going to say, yeah, fuck yeah, this guy's awesome.
This one is not a terrible movie, but it's not a really good one.
It's
either.
A lazy movie. I mean, it's such cut and paste from other movies that it just doesn't qualify to me as a full movie in and of itself. It's more of a side project that ended up borrowing because it didn't have enough meat on the bones.
Alrighty, there we go. Almost kind of sort of worth your time, and we'll catch you next week.
Popcorn hungry? We have it. Kettle from the Popper. There are other treats for you too, such as fresh candies and ice cream. Visit the refreshment center now. Enjoy a delicious snack and ice cold Coca-Cola.
So have you chugged enough Kool-Aid? Might I recommend a J&B chaser with your Kool-Aid? It makes it go down much smoother. The Kool-Aid or the J&B? Well, I'll leave that up to your discretion. Next week, it's satanic worship time as we enter the devil. Never heard of it? Let's find out if it's any good. Drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and stay evil.